Welcome to Mythic Imagination. I'm Honora Foa. It's January, and a young person's fancy turns to Janice, of course. This god stands in eternity surveying yesterday and tomorrow. Sometimes, pictured with four heads, he can see the whole circle of time. He is the god of transitions. He is the god of beginnings. So, let us begin. In September of 2005, Mythic Imagination Institute, in partnership with the Alliance for a New Humanity and Emory University, presented an amazing event called War, Peace, and the American Imagination. This was a conversation with James Hillman, Deepak Chopra, and Jean Houston about war, peace, and the American imagination. When we live into the imagination of the gods, we begin to understand why all of our best rational thoughts seem to have no effect on war. So, about Janus. In legendary Rome, Romulus stole the Sabine women. The Sabine warriors, wanting revenge, came into Rome to attack. Janus caused a hot spring to burst from the earth, making the attack impossible. And in acknowledgement of his intervention, the doors to his temple were kept open during war and closed during peace. This tradition became a powerful ritual and symbol in ancient Rome. But what is interesting is how the meaning of it also seemed to be Janus-faced. In the Aeneid, Virgil says, "The terrible iron-constricted gates of war shall shut, and safe within them shall stay the godless and ghastly lust of blood. Propped on his pitiless piled armory, and still roaring from gory mouth, but held fast by 100 chains of bronze knotted behind his back." So Virgil is talking about Mars being chained inside the locked gates. But Ovid and Horace say that the meaning of the closed gates of the temple of Janus was that peace was locked into the temple and could not get out when war was desired. So in Rome, the closing and opening of the gates became a highly charged political act. Janus, one head is the sun, one head is the moon, was invoked at the beginnings of many things, marriages, harvests, any ritual sacrifice. With war, whether or not the war was sanctified by the god held power for the willingness to engage in it. The Roman Empire, of course, was almost constantly at war, so the whole issue of whether Janus blessed this war was whether it was a declared war or not. It was a powerful symbol, it was a source of power, and it provoked power plays and power struggles. The War, Peace, and the American Imagination event, Jean Houston evoked our American relationship to the gods of war, the gods of sorrow, the gods of triumph, by acknowledging that Atlanta, where this event was held, is the only city in the United States to be burned to the ground in a war. The grief of the American Civil War is still alive here, amidst the clanging engines of the New South. The symbol of the city of Atlanta is the phoenix. Here is Jean Houston opening the event.
I'd like to begin where we are in Atlanta, but not now, no, 143 years ago. Perhaps around Peachtree Creek or Nancy or in Inman Park. It seems to me that I can almost hear it, the shuffling of dusty feet of men in tattered gray and blue, the horses neighing, the old songs picked out on the banjo around some campfire the night before the battle, tenting tonight, my old Kentucky home, just before the battle, mother, when the cruel world is over, when the cruel war is over, somebody's darling. I can hear the soft southern voices reading aloud the letters from home, and I can hear the quiet tang of the northern ones writing the utter fullness of their hearts to their loved ones. I can see what happened across the various creeks where the southern soldiers were on one side and the northern on the other. But at night, as many of you know, they would actually cross the creek and sing together and read their letters to each other and share tiny bits of food or a chaw of tobacco. And then the next day, across the creek, they would have to be enemies again. War and peace. It has been called the crossroads of our being, this Civil War. It has been said that it defined us as to what we are, and it opened us to what we became, both for good and certainly for ill. It exists in our minds like a great, great passion play, a mystery drama that forever beckons, only to recede into the smoke of some ghost of a battle when we think we have actually come close to it. And this passion play has spawned as much reflection, artwork, novels, studies, poems, films, plays, music in the last 140-odd years as has the Passion of Christ. And for perhaps the same reasons, whole industries exist to perpetuate its memory. Ken Burns' PBS series, how many of you saw that? It stunned the public with the power, the truth, the mastery of its presentation. We reflect on this war because it causes us to rise into another aspect of our being. It calls us into being. It chills our heart with its horror, the sheer horror of war. It cracks our mind by its enormity, and it draws us into myth by its very being. It is our Iliad, our Homeric epic. It is our Mahabharata. But although it is long since over and done with, it continues to exist in a between the worlds place where on some forever landscape it perpetually plays itself out, and there it remains, unresting, relentless, demanding that we try to understand it, be available to its mystery, incarnate its passion, and redeem its yet untold vision. As Eliot said, redeem the time, redeem the unread vision of the higher dream. What is in this higher dream? And this is something that will be part of the discussion tonight. What is there beyond the polarity of war and peace? Is there something? Is something new trying to emerge? Is there any saving for us at all? Well, go back 2,000 years, and Virgil, in his first lines of the Aeneid, writes of arms and the man I sing, of arms and the man I sing. The warrior is Aeneid, who proclaims his willingness to fight to death for his country and what it stands for. And this line became the call to arms of generations of English schoolboys as they were sent out to rule the empire. Several decades later, Jesus, who is reputed to have said, put up thy sword, for they that live by the sword shall die by the sword. The image of the man without armor. Jonathan Schell has observed that since then, these two great conflicting traditions, one worldly and sanctioning violence, the other spiritual and forbidding it, have existed. Each tradition inspires people. Indeed, as James Hillman shows in his profound and penetrating study, A Terrible Love of War, war has inspired both a sublime as well as a religious sensibility. Many attempts have been made to reconcile these two traditions. St. Augustine writes of the two distinct realms of existence, the spiritual realm of love and peace and nonviolence, called the Civitas Dei, the city of God. And then there's the public, political city of man, where the law of force always reigns. Machiavelli in The Prince. Now, Machiavelli was very interesting because at night, he would take off his country garb, he would put on beautiful robes, he would go into his study, and he would dialogue with ancient men. And in these dialogues, he would speak it, he would listen. but in these dialogues, he was talking about the dualistic perception between what is good for one's soul and what is good for the Republic. Throughout history, we often find the call to arms occurs simultaneously with the call to spirit and the regeneration of the heart. And it's fascinating, isn't it, that when we consider the 20th century, often called the century of total violence, it was also the century of the rise of extraordinary means of non-violent action, peace. Gandhi and his movement of resistance to the British Empire in both South Africa and India. The resistance that inspired Martin Luther King's civil rights movement in the United States, as well as the non-violent movements in Europe, in Russia, the efforts of Anwar Sadat in Egypt, of Nelson Mandela in South Africa, of Vaclav Havel in Czechoslovakia, Rosa Parks in the United States, as well as the great tides of women the world over who have resisted and risen above the seductive and clamorous dogs of war. And I myself would say that perhaps the most important movement of the last 5,000 years is happening now, the rise of women slowly but surely to full partnership with men in the whole domain of human affairs. Which might just change everything. In fact, it might even result in the soul of culture no longer being a satellite to economics, but economics becoming a satellite to the soul of culture. Two very ingenious, inventive, maverick minds here. Having written two very potent books representing this great dual tradition. James Hillman, who writes from a lifetime fascination and study of war. Deepak Chopra, that this is it for many, many reasons. Not only the rise of women, but the technology, the global village, all of this suggesting that perhaps there is a new alliance for peace that is possible if we allow consciousness to evolve. Something else that I'm going to bring up between these two gentlemen is in many ways a very different take on consciousness. Dr. Hillman, with his extraordinarily astute archaeology of mind and psyche, really having taken depth probings of the human psyche. Dr. Chopra, coming not only from a medical background, but a very much of an Eastern background, a Hindu background, who looks at consciousness as being pulled along by the luminous strange attractor, the emergent form. When I was very, very young, I had the good fortune to walk for 2 years on Tuesdays and Thursdays with a man whom I called Mr. Teilhard, but who turned out to be Teilhard de Chardin. He lived across the street from me. And he was saying, Jean, the people of your time, they will be taking the tiller of the world. But you cannot go directly. You have to touch every people, every consciousness. It has to be a great weave, a newer sphere, a sphere of mind. And I said, but Mr. Teyer, how's that going to happen? There's so much war. How can this happen? He said, oh, don't worry, it is coming. But he never told me how. But in peace is the way Dr. Chopra does offer the ways and means that I think Teilhard would have been very pleased with. Ways and means to move consciousness in an evolutionary direction toward an integral to peace. So we have here, as you see, the possibility of an extraordinary conversation. And I'm going to begin by asking James Hillman to speak first. Each will speak for about 15 minutes, and then I will give them a very zany question to open up the conversation for another 40 minutes, and then we will open it to you. So, let us begin.
Yes, let the great debate begin. But before it does, let's pause for a moment to let Jean's remarks about the Civil War sink in. We reflect on this war because it causes us to rise into another aspect of our being. It calls us into being. It chills our heart with its horror, the sheer horror of war. It cracks our mind by its enormity, and it draws us into myth by its very being. Jean writes in her book, A Mythic Life, Learning to Live Our Greater Story, myths have such power because they are full of archetypes, the cosmic blueprints of how it all works. As major organs of the psyche, archetypes give us our essential connections, and without them, we would lose the gossamer bridge that joins spirit with nature, mind with body, and self with the metabody of the universe. Later, Jean says, I find that it requires many mythic adventures of the soul to re-loom body and mind. Such a mythic adventure is Mythic Journeys, a conference coming up in June where we explore together how the hero's journey rests on the integration of these primal archetypes. As we say goodbye to Jean Houston, let's consider a point she makes in her book. Jean writes, archetypes are many things, primal forms, codings of the deep unconscious, constellations of psychic energy, patterns of relationship. It is these relationships that we will explore next on War, Peace, and the American Imagination as Of Arms and the Man We Sing. Mythic Imagination is a production of the Mythic Imagination Institute. The sound designer for Mythic Imagination is Brad Barnett. Special thanks to Creative Digital Group for the generous use of their studio. Find them on the web at creativedigitalgroup.com. The writer and producer of Mythic Imagination is Donna Barnett. Our musical introduction was by Jeffrey Armus, and he can be found on the web at jeffreyarmus.com. It was a delight working with Jean Houston. She can be found on the web at jeanhouston.org. Dr. Houston is currently serving as an ambassador for the United Nations. To find out more about Mythic Journeys, visit our website, mythicimagination.org. And thank you very much for listening. We'd love to hear your insights or suggestions. Please email them to info@mythicjourneys.org. Tonight, we'll leave you with a letter written during the Civil War by Sergeant Barry Benson of South Carolina. In it, he envisions a life after this one, where war is played out as though in a dream. The letter is read by Brad Barnett. And remember, at Mythic Imagination, every life is a story, and a story can change the world.
Who knows but it may be given to us after this life to meet once again in the old quarters to play at chess and draughts, to get up soon to answer the morning roll call, to fall in at the tap of the drum for drill and dress parade, and again to hastily don our war gear, while the monotonous patter of the long roll summons us to battle. Who knows but again the old flags, ragged and torn, snapping in the wind, but may face each other and flutter, pursuing and pursued, while the cries of victory fill a summer day. And after the battle, then the slain and wounded will arise, and all will meet together under the two flags, all sound and well. And there will be talking and laughter and cheers, and all will say, did it not seem real? Was it not as in the old days?